Welcome to the Instructional Leadership Show. I'm Justin Bader, and I'm coming to you today with a very special episode that I wanted to dedicate to the late Dr. Robert Slavin. And I'm calling this Our Penicillin Moment, a tribute to Robert Slavin. And I recently had the opportunity to interview Dr. Slavin for Principal Center Radio. We published that episode quite recently, and we're waiting for his new website, proventutoring.org, to go live. It did go live recently, so we sent out the Principal Center Radio interview, and almost immediately upon sending that out, I learned that Dr. Slavin had passed away at the age of 70 this past weekend. And I think his legacy is worth reflecting on not only because of how much he accomplished in his career as a researcher and education reformer, but because of the message that he shared with us in his final weeks. I think there's something that we just really need to hear in his message about evidence. So I've made this our essential question for this episode. How can we make science and evidence matter in our decisions as educators so that we have a greater impact on students? And I really enjoyed and was privileged to have a conversation about evidence with Dr. Slavin in his final weeks, and was really struck by both his commitment and his ongoing frustration with our unwillingness to make decisions based on the best available evidence in our profession. So I've been reading different obituaries and tributes from around the internet to Dr. Slavin's work. If you've probably heard of Success for All, his comprehensive school reform model that's made a difference for more than 2 million students around the country. He's the author of more than 300 articles and 24 books. He's a distinguished professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Education, where he directed the Center for Research and Reform in Education. He was a member of the National Academy of Education and an AERA fellow, so certainly one of the top researchers in our field. And you probably have one of his books on your shelf. If you've been through a teacher education program in the last 25 years, you probably have a copy of Educational Psychology, which I think is now in its 12th edition. And of course, he's written many other books. But the legacy project that I think he will be known for in the coming months and years is what he called his Marshall Plan. And I love the way he set this up. He called it the Marshall Plan for education. As we come out of the pandemic, as we look toward the future and figure out, you know, what gaps do our students have that we need to address, he founded a website called proventutoring.org, and that was the subject of our podcast interview. And you can listen to that at principalcenter.com/radio. Just a huge honor to speak with Dr. Slavin in what was probably one of his final interviews. But the idea of Proven Tutoring was to take the 14 programs that have been found by high-quality research to have a dramatic impact on student learning in the areas of math and reading, and get the word out and scale those programs so that they recruit 100,000 teachers and serve initially about 4 million students. And he said, you know, 4 million students is probably a conservative estimate of the number of students who have fallen behind and really need that tutoring. Obviously, we had a pretty substantial number of students in need of tutoring before the pandemic, but I think the urgency is there now in a way that it hasn't been before. And he actually saw this as an opportunity for us to really send the message that evidence matters. And I wanted to share a quote from our interview. He said, "I've been focused on trying to find ways to get evidence to become more important in the decisions that educators make. And it's been rough going, I have to say. But here's a case where the problem is obvious and the solution is obvious." He said the pandemic has caused so many students to fall so far behind that we have to do something, and it's forcing us to look at what will actually work. And of course, the tragedy here is that it doesn't actually force us to look at what actually works. We're certainly free to do lots of things to close those gaps that aren't actually going to work. And that's kind of the problem that Dr. Slavin has battled throughout his career. Our tendency to do things because we feel like it, or to do things because they feel good or because they sound good, even if there is no actual evidence that they work. And I loved this particular quote. He called it our penicillin moment, this moment that we're in right now. And he says, we're hoping that we'll have the kind of impact that things like the polio vaccine or penicillin had, not just on the health of the nation, but on the belief that science matters, that evidence actually matters, and it can make a practical difference for people. It's not just something that professors talk about, but it's something that really can make a difference at scale and really move the needle on a national basis. So we talked more about the kind of implications of the pandemic and what's unique about this moment. And I just wanted to share a couple more detailed quotes because I think there's huge wisdom in Dr. Slavin's words. He said, COVID vaccines build on a long history of medical research and respect for medical research and procedures to make sure that when something is said to be effective, that it really is effective. In education, we have nothing like that, but we could. We use exactly the same methods that medicine does in doing high quality evaluations of educational programs. We use exactly the same methods. And I think we've got to recognize that the research is being done, right? There are thousands of education researchers, thousands of studies being done, being published, being peer reviewed, being critiqued and fought over. And, you know, academic researchers don't always get the respect they deserve in public education because we know, you know, we are the people on the front lines doing the work and that matters too. But I think when it comes to knowing what actually works, we've got to listen to Dr. Slavin's message. So just one more quote here. A couple more quotes here. What we're hoping to have happen, he said, is that we make a convincing demonstration at a time when people might be receptive to a convincing demonstration because of the size of the crisis that we face. And he's saying that it is now time to act on what we know about tutoring. It's now time to act on the proof, the strong evidence that we have that tutoring can actually close the gap for our students who are the farthest behind. And he said in the evaluations that were done that went into proventutoring.org, effect sizes of 0.4 or 0.5, which is typically a pretty big gap. You know, that's typically the gap we have between different groups of students. We can close that gap with tutoring if we have the will. So one more quote here. He said, there are studies of tutoring programs that didn't use a specific program. They kind of made it up as they went along and they got very bad outcomes. So I just want to pause here. If you're thinking, yeah, we already do tutoring in our school or we've tried tutoring in the past and didn't get great results. One of the things that we talked about in our interview was this idea that sometimes we don't operate with fidelity. We don't implement proven models with fidelity. We just kind of do something that sounds similar, like, oh, tutoring works, let's do tutoring. And we don't take seriously the conditions under which that tutoring was done and the way that that tutoring was done and the model that was used. So I want to share this extended quote with you. They made it up as they went along and they got very bad outcomes. This is a fundamental problem that goes far beyond tutoring. People like to hear about the kind of thing that they should do and then they go in and do it as they vaguely understand it and they don't get the results that were reported in the journal, and they wonder why. Well, you know, the person who did the thing in the journal did it in a very specific way, and you need to know what that specific way is and get the training and the materials that will replicate that rather than making it up from scratch. That, my friends, I think is a message that we need to take to heart in our profession because, you know, we like to hear about what works. We like to kind of make it up, you know, put our own spin on it, make it up our own way. And this was a battle that Slavin fought throughout his entire career. Starting in 1987, he started promoting the success for all whole school reform model. And this was initially, I don't know the current state of it, but it was initially seen as a fairly scripted and prescriptive model. And because of that, it rubbed a lot of educators the wrong way. It felt confining. It felt scripted in terms of phonics instruction. There were just a lot of things feel-wise that educators didn't love about success for all. But Slavin believed very deeply that we've got to do for our students what they need us to do, not what we feel like doing. And he faced that criticism head on throughout his career. And that is something that I deeply respect about his work and about his approach to the work. And I think when it comes to looking at tutoring, we've got to look at the evidence. And the evidence is very strong that tutoring has an effect size of 0.4 to 0.6. He said, you know, about a 0.5 is where the effect size is, depending on the study and the program and whether we're talking about reading or math. And that is an effect size that almost nothing else can match. Summer school cannot produce an effect size of 0.5. After school programs can't produce an effect size of 0.5 unless those programs use tutoring as, you know, as their means of serving students. Technology, you know, we spend a lot of money on technology that cannot produce anything close to that effect size. And even teacher professional development is not going to close the gap for our neediest students in the way that tutoring is. So somewhere between 0.4, 0.5, let's look at some of the specifics. And you can find these on Dr. Slavin's blog, which is linked from our website. Proven tutoring programs, effect size of at least 0.3 in the studies that they did compared to 0.02. Notice where the decimal point is for summer school, or 0.03 for after school, or 0.06 for technology. And in our interview, Dr. Slavin said, you know, that's not nothing, right? 0.06 for technology is good. We should invest in technology, but we have to look at how much money we're spending and make sure that we're spending in a way that is actually going to address our students' needs. And here are some of the numbers for reading. Even stronger effect sizes for tutoring. Success for all is included on this graph, and success for all does include tutoring, so that's why you see that on here with such a large bar. But the part that I want to draw your attention to on this particular graph is other tutoring, right? If we just make this up as we go along and say, well, I heard on the internet that tutoring works, so what's the impact going to be? It's going to be great in my school. I'll just make it up as we go along. We'll hire tutors. We'll have them do whatever the teachers think, and we'll see what kind of results we get. Well, the results that we typically get without a proven model are about 0.05, not 0.4, not 0.5, not the kind of gap-closing impact that we want to have. So we've really got to look closely at the model that we're using, and at the, you know, whether the evidence that's out there is describing conditions that we're creating in our school, or whether it's something completely different and we've just kind of made up our own thing. So in the spirit of honoring Dr. Slavin's legacy, I wanted to share a few takeaways and resources with you. First of all, do check out the website. It just launched at proventutoring.org, and you can learn more about the proven programs that are ready to scale. They've been proven to work, and they have the infrastructure in place to serve millions of students through 100,000 or more tutors in the coming months. But a couple of takeaways from our conversation. First, I just think we need a renewed commitment to making evidence-based decisions and to evidence-based practice in our profession. We've got to stop doing just whatever we feel like or whatever we kind of make up as we go along. And it's really easy for that temptation to creep in because, you know, we do have to figure things out for ourselves, right? Anything from the outside is going to be interpreted locally, you know, just in some unique ways. But I really want to use this opportunity to draw attention to the importance of fidelity, right? We cannot simply do whatever we feel like or whatever we think matches the description and assume that it's going to have the impact. We, you know, the fidelity has to be there for the impact to be there. And we have to not allow ourselves to say no to proven practices just because we don't like the feel of them. Like one of the big objections that you will see to tutoring is that teachers don't like to have their kids pulled out of class to work with a non-certified teacher. But the programs that we talked about and the programs that you'll find at proventutoring.org are designed to work, in most cases, with non-certified adults, right? Any college-educated adult who can go through the training and use the materials can have this impact on students. And Dr. Slavin said that's really critical for going to scale, for addressing the scope of the challenge that we face. If we have millions of students who need this intensive one-on-one or small group tutoring, well, we don't have tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of spare certified teachers who can do that tutoring. So the ability for this to work with minimally trained tutors is really, really critical. And that is present in these models. And so if we don't feel great about that, if we think, oh, well, I don't want my kids pulled out of class to work with somebody who's not a teacher, we've got to ask ourselves, do I feel that way for reasons related to its effectiveness? Or do I feel that way for maybe some unrelated reasons? Like maybe I just don't like having the kids pulled out. Maybe that just feels awkward to me. Maybe I don't like that certain groups are overrepresented in the tutoring. But we've got to ask ourselves, do we care about closing that gap? Do I care about providing the support that those students need? So I think we've got to really set some of those feelings aside and say, what do our kids need from us? And the reality is every school has kids who need tutoring. That was true before the pandemic, and it will continue to be the case long after this is all behind us. But right now, at this particular moment in history, we have an enormous need to close the gap for our students. And we'll be identifying those students in the coming months. And my challenge to you is provide that support. So you can go to proventutoring.org and look into those programs. They are all ready to work with you, to share information about their programs. Don't expect this to be free. Tutoring is not cheap. It does cost, you know, on the order of a couple thousand dollars per student, but the impact that it has is huge. And I will tell you personally, when I was a principal, we spent tens of thousands of dollars a year on tutoring. In the school where I worked before I was a principal, we spent tens of thousands of dollars a year on tutoring. And I don't know that we used those programs that were proven to work, but now you have the option. Now you have the potential to bring one of those programs to your school and close that gap. So again, I wanted to dedicate this episode of the Instructional Leadership Show to the late Dr. Robert Slavin and just share some of the insights that he shared in our interview. If you'd like to hear that whole interview, you can go to principalcenter.com/radio and listen on our podcast. But you know, the final takeaway here, though, is Dr. Slavin's bigger message about our penicillin moment, that we have the opportunity now to spotlight the importance of evidence and to say we are no longer going to do just whatever we feel like or whatever we think matches the title of the intervention. We're actually going to take seriously the research, the evidence about what works and how we can meet our students' needs. Thanks so much for tuning in.